Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Welcome to podcast episode 98 of the Fansmanship.com podcast. We are charging towards 100, and we have a special episode today in leading up to the Cal Poly Baseball Regional, the first ever regional that the Mustangs have hosted. We have two college baseball guests. One is Joe Davidson. His Twitter handle is at SACB underscore Joe D, and B as in B-E-E. Joe writes for the Sacramento Bee and covers Sacramento State sports. Sac State, of course. The Hornets are the first opponent for Cal Poly on Friday night. We will also, in the second half of this podcast, be joined by Shotgun Spratling from College Baseball Daily. He is the Southern California beat writer for College Baseball Daily, and he'll be up here as well for the Cal Poly Regional. Cal Poly is the closest thing there is this year to a Southern California Regional. It's actually the only California Regional and one of two regional matchups or regional hosts that are west of Texas, basically. So that'll be interesting to see, to hear Shotgun's take on why that is and whether that's a fair thing, and about a few teams, including USC, who were left out of the tournament this year. So hope you enjoy it. First, Joe Davidson from the Sacramento Bee, and then Shotgun Spratling from College Baseball Daily, and they're both talking about the Cal Poly Regional. The first games are Friday at 1. That would be Arizona State against Pepperdine at Bagot Stadium, and then Friday at 6 is Cal Poly against Sacramento State. Hope you enjoy the podcast, and maybe I'll see you out at the stadium. I'm here with Joe Davidson from the Sac Bee, from the Sacramento Bee. Joe, how's it going?
I'm fine. Good to hear from you, Owen. It's a fun week for regional baseball. Sounds like it's exciting for Cal Poly, which, you know, Sac State is in new rarefied air and going down with an attitude of why not us?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting. That's actually been a hashtag that a lot of the Cal Poly players have used for a lot of this season, the why not us hashtag. And it's rarefied air for them as well, being able to host a regional for the first time, Sac State in a regional for the first time, along with Arizona State and Pepperdine. Did Sac State play either Arizona State or Pepperdine? I know they didn't play Arizona State this year, and not Pepperdine either, right?
No. Did play Oregon State when the Beavers were national number 2, I think. Won that game. Played two games. So have had some success against some of these national powerhouses. Don't have Sacramento State doesn't have a powerhouse Big West conference schedule or conference or Pac-12 type conference. Right. So the competition isn't nearly as tough top to bottom, but like Larry Lee was telling our friend Josh Scroggins of the San Luis Obispo Telegram Tribune, hey, you never know about pitching. You never know what's going to happen. These are nerve-wracking games. Sac State has a freshman pitcher who's 8-1, Sam Long. He'll start the opener. He should be a high school senior. He graduated early.
Wow.
After his junior year and came down and went to Sac State. That's kind of a common ploy in football.
Okay.
But it's really rare in baseball, but that's the impact that Reggie Christensen has as the coach at Sac State, where he wants to build this powerhouse with Sacramento players, and he's doing it. Reese Hoskins, the Western Athletic Conference Player of the Year, is a local guy from Sacramento, from Jesuit High School, and Sam Long, the freshman pitcher, 8-1 from nearby Del Campo High School. So he's getting it done with some local guys. Period. Who's should be getting ready for his high school graduation. Instead, he's on the Central Coast looking to pull an upset.
Yeah, absolutely. I noticed that a lot of the Sac State players are local guys, and I know you have your finger on the local preps, scene there as well. How does that kind of help them in terms of guys who know each other, guys who are comfortable with each other, maybe coming in, being able to come in maybe as like a freshman and be on a team that might be, I don't know, a little bit more familiar with one another coming into a first year in college maybe?
Oh, yeah. And a lot of these guys played against each other.
Right.
In travel ball or against each other in high school ball. Some of them were high school teammates. So they might have been fierce rivals. Some of them became teammates in summer travel ball. And I think they all respected each other, had to respect each other. And so when they came together, they just fit. And they're all hungry. They all, compete with a, let's do it for Sacramento, let's do it for our hometown. So that's all a good cause. And Sac State's been Division I since 1990, and forever. Sacramento's been a baseball town. Dusty Baker's from here, and Dusty Pedroia of the Red Sox is from here. And so this coach, Reggie Christensen, who's got some Bay Area roots and is from California, he said, I'm going to go with local guys.
Yeah.
And I don't know a lot of people thought he could pull it off this fast, but it's had three consecutive 30-win seasons. Here in the tournament, ready to make a move, and he's got some more incoming freshmen from Sacramento, and these guys are big time players. So I think people want to win. They want to play where it's comfortable. Sac State's looking to get lights put in so they can have some night games, much like Cal Poly does and the Big West does up and down. It's a nice deal to have night games, and that helps with the recruiting. It helps people get out there and see games that aren't at 2:30 in the afternoon. So Sac State's on the move, and the next move is to pull a shocker, pull, do something in this tournament. Sure, they'd like to win, but they don't want to get closed out 0-2 either. So they'd like to do something, have a showing. And you work from there.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I'm with Joe Davidson from the Sac B. You can find him on Twitter at SacB_JoeD, I believe, is the Twitter handle. Joe, before this season, the only really real thing that I knew about Sac State, and I'm not a college baseball aficionado. I've kind of been learning as I've been going this year, for sure, with Cal Poly and their ascent over the past, 18 months or so. But the thing that kind of I had in my head, and I looked it up today to confirm it, was the brawl at the beginning of last season. Can you talk a little bit about has that kind of affected the way this year's team has gone about its business? Can you draw a straight line in any way from that low point to maybe this high point for the program? What's been kind of the narrative following that, and kind of moving in, moving past that last year and then kind of playing this year as well?
You talking about the fight last year with Riverside?
With Riverside, right, yeah.
Yeah, oh, I remember that vividly. So we had a local TV station, KCRA Channel 3, NBC affiliate was there to, just get something. And Cotton saw the fight break out.
Right.
And the infielder for Sac State, Ayers, is their previous year conference player of the year. Good guy, good citizen. Totally out of character, yet he gets into this fight with this guy. And it's all over the national news, and you know what's going on, and people love to watch a fight. And so I wasn't there, but I texted Reggie Christensen, and I said, is Ayers a good guy? Or is he a bad rogue here? And he said, no, terrific kid. My players look up to him. My sons look up to him. They're bad boys on the team. He goes, they mix it up a little bit, so I'm going to come out and talk to him. And so I went out there, and the kid completely came clean. He's not a kid, he's a college kid, but he said, I was trying to tag him out, and the Riverside runner grabbed my arm and was trying to twist it in a harmful manner, and I reacted. Shouldn't have reacted, but I reacted. And, I tried to humanize things a little bit. I said, okay, what was your girlfriend's reaction? And, she's a Southern California native, and she was driving up to see me, and somebody texted her the video. And she turned around and went home and then lectured, her boyfriend, you can't do that. And so it was kind of, they could joke about it. I can't even get my girlfriend's approval here. So they, what Sac State learned is, we're not going to take anything. We're not going to get pushover. And, you deal with the consequences and the accountability. You have to set up some games. And you get closer and you learn from it. But also, this is a team with a Pete Rose mentality where you fight and you scrap and you push back. I think the Riverside player ultimately got removed from the program entirely.
I believe so.
And so, you know, it was baseball guys get into it. And, you know, it was not, representative of the overall character of the team. They've had good citizens, good students, good players. And he emerged as one of their great program players. And he learned from it. He's still a fan. He's in minor league baseball somewhere now, but he follows on Twitter and online and all that. So I think what people learned is, you know, hey, this team's got some fight to it, literally.
Literally,
and I think
we'll
see that this week where, remember in the West, the last tournament, they actually lost the game. And you know, you're in trouble when that's a double elimination. And they found a way to win it. So there's a lot to prove with this team.
Sure.
And, you know, what do you do when you're faced up against a heavyweight like Top Hollywood? Top Hollywood is the clear top seed in that regional. Mustang number one for parts of the season, top five most of the season. It looks like a team Coach Lee is really surging. So, great opportunity for Sac State to do something about it.
Absolutely, and to put their name on the map even more. I wanted to ask you, Sac State plays in the WAC. You mentioned it. It's not what you'd call like a power conference in baseball for sure. It at one time was a pretty proud conference kind of all around. But I was looking at the teams that are in it currently, and I mean they span from Chicago to Seattle to Texas and parts, you know, in between. What's the WAC life like? Can you describe it? Can you kind of put it into words? It seems like a ton of travel.
Oh, and it's spread out. That's the best way to say it. I mean, it's kind of it's goofy. And the Western Athletic Conference, you say Western. Chicago's not Western. Texas isn't Western.
Yeah.
North Dakota and Utah aren't entirely Western. And it's been spread and stretched. And I think Sac State ultimately would love to get in the Big West. Used to be in the Big West. Like to be in one of those conferences. UC Davis is in the Big West, so geographically it makes sense. Or the West Coast Conference that has UOP and Stockton and St. Mary's and Pepperdine.
It seems like with all the state schools that are in the Big West, it seems like Sac State would maybe fit right in. But I also thought that about Cal State Bakersfield too, and maybe neither one of those are in there right now, of course, but.
Yeah, and I think it's always something in the works. Sac State's going to have a new athletic director, longtime athletic director Terry Wanless is bowing out. He's retiring at the end of June, and he was the one who hired Reggie Christensen. Really likes what Reggie's done. And Sac State's a sleeping giant. It's Division One in baseball, softball, and basketball. Division One, AA, like Cal Poly.
Yeah, just like Cal Poly.
Football.
Yeah, and
exactly.
And Davis. Yeah.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And I think if Sac State gets baseball lights, and that's the plan, then you're in the argument even more so to get in the Big West or another conference, because I think all those schools have lights, and you know, it's just having lights turned on the light for opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree. You know, I think Santa Barbara is the only school, maybe Northridge, I'm not sure if they have lights, but I don't think Santa Barbara does either, but most of the schools in the Big West definitely do, and it makes a difference both, you know, like you said, for recruiting, for the atmosphere at the ballpark, to just have people there. I mean, not a lot of people can go to a 3:30 Friday game to see you know, your best pitcher, and by the time Saturday and Sunday rolls around, you know, maybe that momentum's not quite there when it comes to the fans.
Totally
either.
Agree. Yeah. Totally agree. And baseball, it's nice to play it under the lights. You know, there's the atmosphere. I've been down to Bagot under the lights for regular season games, and you know what, UOP or Cal, Stanford.
Sure.
I mean, it's a nice energy and a nice buzz, and it's a nice way to show off your product. And you know, if you want to ever get legitimate in college baseball, you're winning conference tournaments, maybe you start hosting regional tournaments.
Yeah.
You cannot have a regional site without lights.
Yep.
So all those are factors.
Yep.
And it's all revenue, too. When you get lights and an opportunity, people come and people bring money.
Yep.
And that's, you know, revenue is survival for college sports.
It's true. Tell me a little bit about Sacramento. I mean, I know it a little bit as a sports town in terms of the Kings, but you know, there's a minor league baseball team nearby. I know down in Stockton, and Sacramento has been talking about it. And they have a MLS 2 team, I think, as well. Where does Sac State kind of fit into the mix and kind of the everyday sports fan's mind when it comes to Sacramento sports?
Sacramento's 20th largest media market in the country, very big Kings town. The Kings finally got rid of the owners that tried to move the team.
The Maloofs?
A couple of times. The Maloof brothers who finally sold, and now Vivek Ranadive from the Bay Area, actually a native of India, and has a software company that does very well in the Bay Area. And he's a people guy, and he has embraced the city. The city has embraced him. The Jets have passed in the city council to have a new arena built downtown to help revitalize downtown. That'll start in 2016. It'll build in 2016 right there, and that will be a huge boost. And a new arena will also bring the return of NCAA college basketball. We used to have those college basketball regionals in the 90s and early 2000s before the NCAA said, Arco Arena, Sleep Train Arena, is just outdated.
Right.
So it's very proactive in that regard. The Sacramento RiverCats are the AAA feeder to the Oakland A's, have won quite a few conference championships or Pacific Coast League championships.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of big league guys have come out of there. The Oakland A's, more than any major league team, uses this AAA team in bringing guys up. Sonny Gray is an example. He's become the ace of the A's now. He was with the RiverCats this last season as a 23-year-old.
Yep.
A lot of sellouts there. Lead minor league baseball in the last 15 years with sellouts. This pro soccer team that you alluded to is averaging 18,000 fans.
Wow.
Which is astounding, and it shows you how the stadium seats 19. So, you know, twice it's been packed. And people love their minor league sports, and they certainly have the 49ers or Raiders or some NFL-type team come up. Never happened having three NFL teams in Northern California, but they like to support it. Now, as for Sac State, football has been a 500 team the last few years, been on the cusp of breaking through. Have had some big wins. I remember we beat Cal Poly a couple of years ago when Cal Poly was unbeaten, but hasn't had that breakthrough. And you know, fans are also fickle. You know, give them a winning product, they'll go. And so it's a region, general, Owen Sacramento that took a big hit with the economy, the recession, but has recovered nicely. Loves the sports, but I think people are on board with Sac State as long as there's success. And I don't know if that's shallow, but I think that's just typical of American fans or fans worldwide. You know, when you have a winner, we'll come out. And
right.
If it's not a winner, then we'll keep you posted kind of thing. And with baseball, there's a lot of interest. A lot of interest because there's a lot of local kids.
Yep.
They're winning. They're in the news. So people are excited. I think there's going to be a big contingent of fans from Sacramento that'll come down because the Central Coast, as you know, is a nice place to go. It's there are worse places to go spend a regional weekend.
Yeah, it's not bad. Having grown up in Cayucas, I can attest to that for sure. And I think it's super interesting, you know, what you say about the winners. I really feel like that's kind of more of a, it's almost like a West Coast thing more than anything. You know, when you look at the numbers for like attendance in the SEC, for instance, in baseball, versus attendance, you know, in any other conference, it's ridiculous. I think the SEC drew, you know, millions of fans this year, you know, 2 or 3 million or something like that. You know, the Cal Poly, who had a great year in the Big West, probably their best year ever, drew about, you know, 45,000 in 30 games, which is a good number. But you know, it kind of pales in comparison. When you have a consistent winner, then you can be like Fullerton that, you know, has a stadium that seats, you know, maybe 3,000, 3,500, something like that, I believe. And they can, you know, during good seasons, they can fill that thing up. I think also the concept of, like you said, having local kids on your team and being able to draw a little bit better that way, I think that's a great way to start to build a program. And I just can't wait to see Sac State. Last question for you, Joe, as we kind of wrap up here.
Sure.
If if Sac State, fill in the blank here, if Sac State does this, then they're going to have a good chance of beating anybody that they play. If the Sac State baseball team does what?
Has great pitching. I just don't think Sac State can expect to slug all these teams. And if they could get some really good efforts from Sam Long, or their starter, and just, you know, make it a pitching type of duel, I think Sac State's in great shape. But you know what, Erwin, it's baseball. So
yeah,
who knows
exactly.
What's going to happen. Sac State's certainly capable of winning a 13-8 game. But what do people always say in baseball, you know, what kind of pitching? Sac State plays good defense. Got some good sluggers in the lineup, including Reese Hoskins, who's the conference player of the year, the WAC conference player of the year. It's starting pitching. And because Sac State has really good relievers, has some terrific relievers, including Sutter McLaughlin, who looks like a, you know, he's just a tower figure of a 6'5.5".
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, get a good solid game into your bullpen and then take it from there. And can't afford to have your starters chased in the third or fourth inning. So that's the whole key to me. And I think Sac State certainly wants to win this, but, you know, they want to just compete. You know, show well, show that you belong, and just see what happens. Yeah. And, you know, Sac State's got an attitude. Reese Hoskins was saying, you know, we're not going down there feeling like an underdog. We're looking at this as a great opportunity.
Yeah.
Great attitude.
Yeah, absolutely. We've definitely Cal Poly fans down here have definitely been in that boat, you know, over the past few years, and can definitely, you know, picture exactly what that mentality is. It's why not us? It's you know, while we're here, we may as well do something. I think, you know, keeping the score under 4 or 5 runs, especially, you know, against Imhoff at Cal Poly, will be a key to this game for sure. Joe, I just really appreciate you taking the time today, and looking forward to seeing you on Friday night at 6 o'clock at Bagot, where Cal Poly will face Sac State. I think it's really interesting. Two of the teams in the Cal Poly Regional handed the number one overall seed 3 of their 11 losses this season. And Arizona State beat them twice, and Sac State beat them once. It'll be a real good regional.
I agree. It'll be fun. It's going to be a great location. Good weather. You know, we can't complain. Oh, and nice talking to you. We'll see you down there at the yard.
Sounds good. Thanks so much, Joe.
Much better.
Ramping up to the regional here. California has got a regional. I know that that College Baseball Daily had a few things a few weeks ago that kind of projected that they might not. San Luis Obispo did end up getting a regional. Cal Poly kind of earned their way in with sweeping Northridge in the last series and winning a series against Irvine. And sweeping Fullerton kind of in the last, or excuse me, winning a series against Fullerton. No, they swept Fullerton, yeah, in the last number of weeks of conference. Did you think that Cal Poly was kind of always assured a regional unless they kind of slipped up at some point?
Yeah, I thought so. I mean, after the Fullerton series, definitely you thought that they were in line to host a regional, especially with how many other teams in the West Coast area that, you know, I've struggled and stuff, that you figured as long as Cal Poly didn't go on like a Irvine run type of run where they lose 3 series in a row, then they were going to be in line to at least host, if not be a potential national seed. And that was kind of the bigger question in my mind. Would they do enough to get a national seed? And I think that, you know, when they slipped up losing the series at Long Beach and then losing the midweek game against Pepperdine, you know, that little short span where they struggle a little bit, I think that kind of cost them national seed. Because being, you know, a team that's not as known as much, like losing Lafayette, you got to do a little bit more, I think, to earn that national seed. And they weren't able to do that with that little stretch where they, you know, struggled a little bit and lost for, what was it, 4 in a row, I believe.
Yeah.
But they bounced back after that and, you know, finished off their Riverside series and then finished off Northridge, and we're able to ride into the sunset type of thing as far as the regular season goes, having the extra week off.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. You know, they lost 4 in a row, but they never had a losing week, I don't think, all year. And definitely, I feel like if they would have been in single digits in losses, like 46-9, you know, if they would have just won one of those games, you know, maybe the national seed is kind of more in play, because 9 losses looks a lot better than 10, I guess, on the year. But I think overall they got a pretty fair. A fair bracketing, a fair, you know, potential super regional matchup. You know, it all kind of there was nothing kind of outlandish. I know people are talking a lot about, you know, Miami's. I think Miami's versus Florida's draw in the regional out east. You know, in the south there. But I think as far as Cal Poly goes, it's about as good as they could have hoped for given the location of the other teams and who else was out there, right?
Yeah, I really like the fact that the NCAA didn't match up San Luis Obispo and the Corvallis Regionals potentially in a super regional, just because, you know, they're the only two Western hosts, first time I think since 2006, I believe it was, that there weren't more than two regionals on the West Coast. So I was kind of happy with the fact that they decided not to match those two up. That could have been really easy to do. Could have been, you know, something that would be kind of lazy. You know, it's a closer travel, but you know, we get tired of seeing the same matchups over and over. And I like the idea of traveling a little bit more, even though the NCAA tries to limit the travel as much as possible to bus trips. If possible, then, you know, have a bus trip rather than a plane ride. But I like the fact that they matched up San Luis Obispo with TCU with the Fort Worth Regional and matched up Corvallis with the Stillwater Regional. And, you know, it gives the teams an opportunity, you know, for example, Cal Poly, to give them something to look forward to if they are to win, you know, and TCU wins. Then, hey, we get this fun trip. We're going to Texas. You know, I don't know how many players have actually been that far, you know, east or anything. So it could be something to look forward to. And that's a, you know, a precursor trip potentially to your trip to Nebraska the week after that.
Sure. And the basketball team actually at Cal Poly went to TCU 2 years ago and played at TCU in their first game of the year, I think, 2 years ago. So somebody knows something about it in the athletic department, whether it's the baseball team, you know, obviously not, but, you know, the basketball players might be able to tell them something about it. I wanted to ask you about kind of the West Coast in general. You spent a lot of time in Southern California. I think there were only, I'm trying to picture it here. There were not a ton of Southern California teams taken. Actually, there were a number of them from the Big West. But the Pac-12 Southern California, you know, contingent of UCLA and USC were shut out. I counted it up today, and I think I could be wrong, and you can correct me on this, but I think it's the second or it's the third time in I think 28 or 29 years, the past 28 or 29 years, that both UCLA and USC have been shut out of the NCAA tournament. I think it was like in, you know, 85, you know, if you go back to like 86, you know, then 03 and 09 and then 2014 were the years that I could find where both of them were out of the picture here. USC, I know, was a team that people were really kind of hoping might get a bid. I know you're a USC guy, you know, in terms of, you know, having gone there maybe. Talk about should they have been a NCAA tournament team?
I mean, they had their opportunities. USC did great in the last weekend, taking 2 of 3 from the number one team in the nation, Oregon State. You know, trying to put that mark on the and show the committee that, hey, we're a quality team, we're high caliber, we can get in. But the problem is the week before that, you lost 2 out of 3 to Cal, who's a terrible team. And the week before that, you lost 2 out of 3 at Washington State, who's not a good team either. So, you know, they had their opportunities. And one of the biggest things was UC Irvine gets in, and Dennis Frail, the committee chair from the Big West Conference commissioner, says that they're one of the last four in. He says USC is one of the last four out. And when asked about it, he said, you know, the midweek games when those two teams played head-to-head, Irvine wins both of those games. That kind of had a, you know, played a big factor in the fact that USC didn't get in and Irvine did. I mean, if USC wins those two games and Irvine loses those two games, suddenly I think both of those teams are flipped and it's UC Irvine is one of the first four out and USC is one of the last four in. Yeah. But that's the way it plays out. You got to win the midweek games, you know, the games at the beginning of the season, you're like, oh, shucks, we should have won that game because USC led one of the Irvine games and they ended up losing, I think, 6-4. you know, when you're like, oh, shucks, we lost that game. And then later down the road, you look at it and you're like, oh, man, was that the one game that could have changed the, you know, whether or not we get in or not?
Yeah.
So USC had their opportunities. They lost some games down the stretch that they needed to win. I mean, going into that Washington State series, they were sitting pretty because they had beat UCLA, swept them, had earlier in the conference schedule, they'd taken two out of three out of Stanford. And I also think the fact that Stanford swept their weekend series against Utah helped them get in over USC, because I think the Pac-12 as a conference was going to get five teams in. And with Stanford sweeping at the end and USC not being able to finish up the last month strong, I think that ended up changing the aspect of who gets in there, whether it was going to be Stanford or USC. So
got it.
I think USC can't really blame anyone for, you know, not getting them in. They had their opportunities.
Got it. And you know, the narrative over the past few years just for West Coast teams, and I didn't say it, I don't think, at the beginning of the second half of the podcast, I'm with Shotgun Spratling from SoCal College Baseball Daily. I think maybe I did say that. I did introduce you properly. The narrative has always been, you know, West Coast versus East Coast. West Coast teams haven't generally had a chance to kind of go out and spread out across the East Coast during the regular season as much as maybe some of them would have liked. I know Larry Lee's talked about that in the past in terms of trying to get games with SEC and ACC teams, or series in the preseason and having a hard time scheduling those. But at this point, you know, you have, I think there's eight, you know, West Coast teams that are, you know, spread out in some of those other regionals that are happening in the South and in the, you know, on the East Coast. Is this really kind of an opportunity for some of those teams that might be kind of middle of the road, you know, in terms of their regional, maybe be a two or three seed in their regional, or even a four to maybe make a statement for the West Coast? You know, what kind of a statement would it be if one or two of those teams came back with a regional win or took one of those top teams kind of to the brink in one of those regionals?
I mean, it's always, the scheduling is always interesting because, you know, ACC and SEC schools don't really want to do home and home series, for one, because LSU barely plays anybody in the non-conference. The reason is, one, because it's easy for them not to, and for two, it makes a lot of money when they stay at home.
Yeah, yeah, they seat 10,000 and everybody else seats, you know, 3,000. That's a big difference.
Yeah, when you get 500 people at a USC game versus when you get, you know, 5,000 for most any SEC game, even if you're playing the deaf, the dumb, and the blind, you know, that's a big difference as far as making money for the program. So I think that plays into it a big, and, you know, some teams will come out here. Vanderbilt came out the very beginning of the season and played Long Beach State in a three-game series. You know, I've seen Georgia's come out a couple times. Vandy's come out, you know, on a couple of different occasions. NC State was supposed to come out here this year for UC Santa Barbara.
They got rained out, yeah.
Yeah, teams will make those schedules, but it's not a consistent thing that we see all the time. So, yes, this is definitely an opportunity for some teams to, you know, make some noise and you know, kind of get their name out there in a national brand, especially for some of the smaller schools. And I'd say, look at San Diego State, and they had their press conference today, and their assistant coach, who's the acting head coach, Mark Martinez, in Tony Gwynn's stead right now with him being sick, he said, you know what, we're going to go over there and we're going to try to make a name for ourselves. This is an opportunity for us to show our brand, our logo, that we're the Aztecs. Because how many people really know much about San Diego State outside of basketball? I mean, does anybody know anything about San Diego State baseball? Maybe they know that Tony Gwynn went there. That's about the only thing. If they know that he coaches, that might be it. About San Diego State football, maybe somebody's heard that Marshall Faulk went there. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, it's not known as anything but a basketball program, where this is an opportunity where if you win your regional, all of a sudden they're facing off in the Lafayette regional with Lafayette, Mississippi State, and Jackson State. If they win that, then they could potentially be at an SEC school playing at Ole Miss if they were able to get through their regional. So, you know, this is a chance for you to grow your brand and potentially, you know, you're at a showcase, all of a sudden the kid's like, oh yeah, I saw you guys in Lafayette, and it's a Texas kid.
Sure.
Because he was watching on, you know, ESPN3 or whatever it may be. It gives you an opportunity to get to more eyes. It gives you a chance to get to more recruits. So I think it's a big opportunity, and it's going to be fun, you know, getting to see all these teams that are kind of spread out. You got San Diego State and Lafayette. You got Long Beach going to Gainesville to play the Gators, and you know, that's going to be a really interesting regional with North Carolina there sneaking in. And then probably the best four seed in the tournament, College of Charleston, with 41 wins. That should be a fun fun matchup there. That one and the Lafayette are two of the best regional matchups, just because it's going to be a great entertainment. The Lafayette regional is going to have a ton of power arms with Cedar Roth from San Diego State and Regan Bizarre from Lafayette and Jacob Lindgren coming in from Mississippi State throwing just devastating sliders that, you know, hurt the batters just looking at them, you know. It's going to be fun to see that. And you got Fullerton going to Stillwater. Fullerton's gone a couple times to the Midwest, to the, you know, the Oklahoma, Texas area this past year and last year. So, you know, I think they're really prepared for that. And a lot of people are, you know, pointing at them as a potential three seed to get out of it. And so that should be a fun one as well.
Yeah. Which of those teams going out east do you think has the best shot at maybe pulling an upset and sneaking out of there with a regional win?
A sleeper. If you look at Cal State Fullerton, they come into the season number one. They struggle throughout the year. Their coach gets put on a paid administrative leave, and then the investigation, air quotes, takes a month to do. He finally comes back, and they just go on a roll. So that team's really going well right now, and that's a team that not many people want to see make it into the regionals.
Yep.
Just because of how strong their pitching staff is. I mean, you got Eshelman, Garza, Weiss. And then you got guys with Kobe Gana, J.D. Davis, and, you know, Phil Bickford, who would be the starting rotation for several Big West schools.
Bickford drafted last year? I mean, come on. And he's
the number 10 overall pick. I mean, you got him as your Tuesday guy. Come on.
He's going to be the long reliever or something in the regional. They're silly. And Garza threw a no-hitter, I think, last week, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, Garza throws a no-hitter. Weiss follows it with a three-hit shutout. I mean, the pitching has been you know, on point almost all season, and now the bats have really come alive. J.D. Davis is, you know, as hot as the surface of the sun right now, and Matt Chapman's been swinging it well for the last 2 months. And finally, the other guys in the lineup are starting to do their part. Yeah, Keegan Dale had an 18-19 game hit streak. Clay Williamson's recent like 24 straight or something like that.
Yeah, if they can score any runs, I mean they're a devastating team, and they have that level of pitching talent that just, you know, if they can put four runs on the board, they're hard to beat.
Exactly, and now that the other guys in the lineup are doing something, they don't have to, you know, knock bombs or, you know, get on base 20 times in a weekend or anything. But if they do a little bit and they do the small things, sacrificing guys over, you got guys like Jared Deacon at the bottom of the lineup. He's been hitting really well the last couple of weeks since Hookie came back. So, you know, that's a team that is not one anybody wants to face, but that's going to be an entertaining regional because Nebraska is a quality program. I saw them last year when they came out here to play Fullerton, and also saw their fabulous freshman Ryan Bolt, saw him in the summer playing in the Perfect Game All-Star Game, and that kid was the MVP of the All-American game here in San Diego, and he's, you know, lightning quick out there in the outfield and can do a little bit of everything for you. I really like him. And Oklahoma State's a team that's, you know, win the Big 12 wasn't an easy task this season, and they went and did that, and they've won 45 games. So you got to give them a lot of credit. There's a reason why they're hosting.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. A quick footnote, former Cal Poly coach Rich Price got – is it Kansas where he coaches? Got the Jayhawks in this year, I think?
The Jayhawks are in, indeed.
Yeah. So we'll kind of keep an eye out on that as well. Let's talk a little bit about Cal Poly Shotgun. They had a week off leading up to the regional here, and so they haven't played a real game in you know, a good solid, you know, it won't be 14 days, but it'll be like 10 or 12 days by the time they play again. I was over there today, and they told me, you know, they played some inner squad kind of stuff over the weekend, but the mantra was really, hey, this is going to help us so much. We're loose still, and it's going to help our pitchers, you know, in terms of the grueling kind of Big West schedule that they faced. Guys like Reed Riley and Taylor Chris, you know, who are both, I think, first team all Big West selections, put up just kind of, you know, huge innings for relievers and a high number of games back to back to back throughout the season. And really the mantra, it seemed like, was, hey, this is just going to be great for us. We're going to come into this thing, you know, refreshed and fresh. You saw kind of Matt Imhoff as, you know, case in point, kind of fade a little bit over the course of the last few series. You know, he's still Matt Imhoff, and he's still you know, pitching like he can pitch, but maybe not the 13-1 strikeout to walk ratio that you saw sometimes earlier, you know, in the season. How do you buy into that kind of a narrative for a team to be able to sit out for a week and come in and pick up where you left off in terms of hitting and pitching?
I mean, I think it definitely, I think it can go both ways easily. I mean, we see a lot of times with, you know, teams that have buys and playoffs and stuff like that, and do they come out fresh and ready to go, or do they come out sluggish because they've been off for so long? It's always a question, and, you know, it can go either way. I think this really helps Cal Poly's pitchers, like you said. I mean, Taylor Chris and Reed Riley, it wasn't necessarily the grueling Big West schedule. It was the grueling usage of them during the Big West schedule. I mean, when you got two guys that, are that good, it's hard not to rely on them that much. But also, it's, you know, when nobody else steps up in the bullpen, and you can, you know, rely on them a lot. The same thing happened with Santa Barbara with Dylan Tate and Greg Molly. And those two guys, it looked like they wore down a little bit the last couple of weekends. So I think it's really going to help those two guys in the bullpen, you know, having that week off. And Matt Imhoff, I think, like you said, I think he wore down a little bit. I think this week off is going to be good for him. And Casey Bloomquist, because he's coming off that knee injury that he sustained against Long Beach State, and he came back and pitched well the last couple of weeks when he got healthy. But I think just having an extra week off doesn't hurt at all, you know, when you're less than a month away, removed from a game where you had to come out for an injury. And but the thing is, with the batters, are they going to be locked in or not? I mean, like Jimmy Allen that last weekend at Northridge was just not covered off the ball all over the place. You know, I asked him about that, too. I was like, do you really want a week off? Or, you know, he's like, well, it's best for the team that we're getting this week off because our pitchers can use the rest. But he didn't really, you know, go fully into, yeah, I'd love to have a week off, you know. Yeah. But he did say it's going to be good for the guys to kind of get away from baseball for a couple of days and, and, you know, relax their mind. And but that also plays can play the other way at the same time because – you get a week off, and now you know, hey, we won the Big West. We are going to be in the tournament. Now you got an extra week to think about it.
Yeah.
You're sitting around at home, you know, playing PlayStation, going, oh, man, we're in the tournament. Oh, man. And you're freshman all of a sudden. Your guys like Mark Mathias, who wasn't a, you know, contributor on last year's team. Right. You know, guys like that. Chris Hu, who played sparingly in the regional last year, if at all. I don't remember if he even got in, but – you know, guys like that, they're such huge contributors throughout this season. Yeah. Now they start thinking about it a little bit. Oh, yeah, I got to do this in the regional now. And I sat around and watched it last year. Now I got to do it. I got to be the guy this year. Sure. Does that get their mindset? You know, it just depends on the person, right, and it depends on it. So, like I say, it's easily a thing that can go either way.
Sure.
From all I talked to the Cal Poly guys, I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. But, you know, you got to get out there and play, and that'll you know, we'll see what they have on Friday at 6 p.m.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, from my perspective, I think the key for Cal Poly is definitely, you know, like you said, are they going to come out, you know, are the 2 week, you know, is the 2 week break going to make them flat? I think in the end, when you kind of alluded to it, you know, their pitching depth is something that I've been super interested in all year, in terms of their willingness to use kind of like a variety or not a variety of relievers out of the pen. You know, who do they have after Riley and Chris, I think is an interesting thing. I feel like in a regional, there's always one pitcher who you don't expect to get hit a little bit, who you have to take out, you know, earlier. So as a guy like, you know, Danny Zandona or Brian Granger or Justin Calameni or Slater Lee, you know, or Michael Dingillian even, who kind of was used sparingly all year. You know, one of these guys is going to have to pitch some innings in the regional, I think. If they don't, it'll be, you know, it'll be just how Larry Lee drew it up in terms of, you know, a starter going 7 or 8 innings and then Lee or Chris coming in and, or excuse me, not Lee, but Riley or Chris coming in and shutting the door and, you know, win 3 games and be happy. But, you know, that's not how regionals always go. Right. And so the idea is that you're going to have one of these guys probably step up, if not more than one of them, and give you, you know, a 2 or 3 inning kind of spurt at some point in the middle of a game to keep you in a game and allow your offense to try to claw back at some point in a regional, right?
Yeah, I don't necessarily think that this St. Louis Obispo regional is going to go the way of the UCLA regional last year or the Fullerton regional last year, where it was, you know, the host team, both of those kind of swept through. Granted, UCLA got the benefit of the game against Cal Poly, the game-changing fly ball against Arsenal Life.
Yeah.
But the fact that they were able to, three games and they were done. They dominated the first game against San Diego State. They dominated that third game against San Diego. And they dominated after that fly ball against Cal Poly. Yeah. So, you know, they kind of just walked through that. And the same thing with Fullerton last year when they hosted. They kind of walked through their regional at the same time. They did win a 1-0 game. But, you know, I think this regional is going to have a lot more action in it than those two necessarily did last year. Just because when you have a Pac-12 team in there with the kind of history that Arizona State has, and I like this Pepperdine squad, they're really scrappy. I think those three teams, you know, with Cal Poly, you know, it's going to be a really interesting regional. I don't necessarily think any of those three teams is just going to waltz right through like we might have seen in some of the ones last year in the Southern California area.
Yeah, I talked to Joe Davidson from the SAC B today, too, and he, you know, he seems to think, you know, well, obviously Sac State's not coming to lose either, and they seem to be a pretty scrappy team, a team that I think won 40 games maybe this year, you know, has also fared pretty well in terms of at least winning. They are in the WAC, but you know, hey, there's four good teams when you make it to the NCAA tournament. You know, you're gonna there's no cakewalks, right?
Yeah, unless you get Youngstown State in your regional, like Indiana did with a 16-36 record, then and an ERA over 6 as a team. Other than that, you know, there's usually not too many easy squads that you're going to go through in a regional.
I was with some people who are hoping that was the other regional that Cal Poly would be matched up with for the super regional. Just you know, with Indiana and Youngstown State and whoever else is over there, they were like, come on, match us with Indiana, and it didn't happen. Hey, so let's break down this regional. Give me something real quick about each team. Like, if this team does this really well, they're going to be in pretty good shape. So you can start with Cal Poly if you want to, but you know what, in your mind, if you're a fan watching and you see Cal Poly do what, you're going to be pretty excited about, you know, their chances.
The key for each of these teams, let's go with it that way. Cal Poly is, you know, trying, someone stepping up besides their four main arms. You got Casey Bloomquist, you got Imhoff, you got Taylor Chris Reed-Riley in the bullpen. You got to have at least one more pitcher. Unless you get complete games out of Bloomquist and Imhoff, and you split the third game between Taylor Chris and Reed Riley, somebody else has got to step up. Is that going to be Justin Calamini, the freshman who pitched pretty well the last couple starts that he had? Is it going to be Danny Zandona, who you know, pitched really well down the stretch in the midweek games and out of the bullpen? You know, somebody's got to step up there. And also, they just got to get consistent contributions like they've been getting all season throughout the entire lineup, which has been key for them. You know, having Chris Hu at the bottom of the lineup being such a, you know, a key contributor, doing a little bit of everything for them. You know, I think those type of players at the bottom of your lineup can really propel you through a regional, because you won't always get, you know, great production out of the guys that you're used to getting production from. So if you can get some guys that, you know, you don't necessarily expect to be the big home run hitters or anything that give you 5, 6, 7 hits in a regional, then I think that can really push you forward. Moving over to Arizona State, I think, you know, for them, the key is, you know, having their two lefties, Lilick and Ryan Kellogg, pitch well at the front, and then Ryan Burr at the back end. You know, he's a guy that can go multiple innings. They started him as their Friday guy this year, but then they decided to put him back in the closer spot because he just got that mentality as a closer. He wants the ball, he wants to go in there and just shove it at people. So that didn't necessarily work when he was throwing 100 pitches in 4 1/3 innings as a starter. But as a reliever, you can come in just throwing gas all day, and that's what he's going to do. And I think for them, another key is the top of their lineup. You know, you got Johnny Seawald as a freshman and Stankiewicz after that. You know, those two guys got to get on base for the middle of their lineup. Nate Causey is a really proficient hitter, and he, you know, does a little bit of everything well with the bat. He's a guy that can handle it pretty well. And then R.J. Yavar can knock the crap out of the ball. He drove in, I think, 45 runs this season. So I think that's the key for them. For Pepperdine, it's all about their two arms at the beginning of the rotation, Aaron Brown and Corey Miller, the big redhead. Both of those guys were phenomenal for them in the West Coast Conference. pitched them to the championship game, and then they had Jackson McClellan, a sophomore, pitch really well in that championship game. They've got to get contributions from their freshmen. I mean, Aaron Barnett has been ridiculous all season. He's batting .378 as a freshman catcher, and that's, you know, between catcher and DH. You know, you don't expect that out of any freshman, and he's come in and just been great, and he's pretty good behind the plate when he's back there. And, you know, they got to get a little bit of something from Eddie Jefferson on the offensive end. When he contributes offensively, that team just is so much better 1 through 9. You know, they got him in there for his defense. He's incredible defensively. He made a tremendous game-changing play in the championship game of the WCC, making a leaping, diving catch over his shoulder to save a run from scoring. And then right after that, they score 3 runs. And then he knocks an RBI double as well. When they get offensive contributions from him, the lineup just becomes longer and longer. And you don't really want to face the middle of their lineup. Brad Anderson's been swinging really well. Aaron Brown is just a beast in the middle of the lineup. He hit 12 home runs this year, as well as having a 2.24 ERA and 11-1 record on the mound. If A.J. Reed wasn't so good this year, knocking 23 homers and being the Friday night guy in the SEC for Kentucky, then everybody would be talking about Aaron Brown as the premier two-way guy this season. He's just been phenomenal for him. And, you know, this is kind of what has been expected of Aaron Brown for a couple years now. And he was eligible sophomore last year because of his age to be drafted. He decided to come back. Corey Miller was drafted. He decided to come back. And those two guys have really led this team. So I think those two veterans got to do with their part, but it's the freshmen that's going to be the real key for them. For the freshman and even the sophomore in Brad Anderson to step up as well, and Hutton Moore. You know, they've got some young guys in the infield. Those guys have to, you know, do their part and step up. And then looking at Sacramento State, they come in with 39 wins, and, you know, they got one big bopper in the middle of the lineup. Reese Hoskins has hit 12 home runs. He led the Cape League, I think, last year in RBIs. You know, he can hit the ball. The guy's going to, you know, knock it around the ballpark, 18 doubles, 12 homers, 53 RBIs. He slugged almost 600 this season. You know, but can other people around him do something?
Right.
Besides him, they only had two hitters batting above .300 this year. And both of those are, you know, Nathan Lukes and Kyle Moses are, you know, slight build outfielders who have a little bit of speed. But, I mean, Lukes was 10 of 20 stealing bases, so I don't know how much speed he has. Moses was 12 of 14, but they don't run too much as a team. So, you know, somebody's got to step up. Somebody's got to step up and, you know, play out of their mind this weekend. When you're a 4-seed, you got to have somebody do that.
You got to have some big innings, right? I mean, I feel like you got to have some innings where guys just kind of randomly string a bunch of hits together to be in games against these other three teams, I feel like.
Exactly. And in a regional, you don't expect, you know, a pitching staff to fall apart and just have a bunch of walks or something.
Right,
like the in the whack, especially when you get past the starter and get into a bullpen. You know, when you get past the starter and you're into the bullpen against Arizona State, then, you know, you've got guys that are throwing 90 miles an hour still.
Right.
So it's a lot different, you know, the WAC versus the Pac-12 in that regard. So, you know, they're going to have to get some hits, and they're going to have to get some pitching. I mean, Brennan Leto, I think is how you say his name. I'm not exactly sure, but he threw 110 innings for them this year. You know, he was the top guy, 2.21 ERA, went 9-4, you know. They got to get their starters to, you know, pitch out of their minds, basically.
Yep.
And it's going to be difficult playing against Cal Poly in Cal Poly. They're used to playing there. They like it when it gets nice and warm and starts to be a launching pad. That's how the Mustangs like to play. So don't think that they're going to come in and be like, oh, I'll just hit some fly balls and we'll be good. This place will play like spacious Blair Field or something at Long Beach. They're going to have to come in there and get ground balls and get a lot of them.
Yeah, Baggett's like a tale of two stadiums after the sun goes down to me. There was a series a couple weeks ago when, you know, it was a little bit cloudy or two of the games were played, you know, before or after the sun went down. And there were a couple balls that guys just hit on the screws and they were just, you know, fly outs to the warning track. I think it was against Irvine. I mean, you see these guys, it didn't look like they missed the ball at all. You know, guys who usually hit out of the park. And again, maybe it has something to do with fatigue. But during the day at Bagot, that's a whole different story. You know, I was out there, you know, this afternoon, and that wind was blowing out to left center, and it was warm. And, you know, I imagine that Arizona State Pepperdine game, you know, with you know, Aaron Brown and some of those guys, I'm looking forward to seeing that game ahead of the Cal Poly Sac State nightcap. Of course, they brought in a bunch of extra seats at Bagot, so you know, they're talking about the chairback seats being sold out, and the other ones are going fast as well. So they're sure to be kind of a big crowd. I think the single game tickets go on sale tomorrow morning, so I'm sure by tomorrow afternoon, some of those single games will be sold out as well. Quick note too, and wanted to get your take on it. You know, I think Oregon State had like 11 losses all year. They're the number one seed in the whole tournament. Three of their losses this year came against teams from the Cal Poly Regional. Two against Arizona State when Arizona State went up and beat them 2 out of 3 in Corvallis. And then Sac State, I think, also beat them in Corvallis before they lost to them down in Sacramento as well. So, you know, these are teams that can win one game. Even Sac State.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Sac State has guys in the middle, and also give Sac State credit, they're a veteran team. They return, I believe, you know, I think it's 6 or 7 of their position players. You know, they've got some quality arms as well. I mean, Leto pitched for them last year. Ty Nichols pitched for them last year. Those guys, you know, they've been through the grind of the college season. The only thing is, this is Sacramento State's first NCAA postseason tournament bid. So, you know, how much does that affect them? A lot of times, that first time, you're just happy to be there rather than, you know, wanting to, you know, make a big impact or anything. Yep. So, I don't know that the Sac State's going to do much there just because of that factor. I don't ever like, you know, the first time teams in that regard.
Yeah.
But also, one thing to look at with Cal Poly, and you were talking about how Bagot Stadium plays different during the day and at night. You know, if somebody hits if there's a couple well hit fly balls that die at the warning track or something, does that get in the minds of the Cal Poly players? Because it really did at Long Beach State, I think. You know, they lost 2 games there, and I think it really affected them, the fact that the ball just doesn't travel at all at Long Beach State at Blair Field, even though the wind was kind of blowing out that weekend. And I think it affected the whole team, because even Larry Lee was talking about, you know, the conditions of the field and, you know, how it was playing. So if a couple of those fly balls don't go out, then they start going, man, what we got to do here to, you know, get some big whips or something.
Right, right.
Just because it affected them in that series, then I'm curious to see if that were to happen in a regional, especially if they're, you know, if they're playing Arizona State or Pepperdine in a close game, and, you know, somebody hits one really well and it just kind of dies, and they're like, well, man, we're down 2-1. And it just doesn't seem like it's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I was kind of worried about that too. And then, you know, you think about, and not worried, but, you know, this is definitely a factor. I mean, you see guys who hit it on the screws and who don't get what, you know, don't get the fruits of what they do. That being said, you know, this is a team that also has kind of persevered through some of that stuff all year. You know, they lost their first game at UCLA when UCLA was a little bit healthier than they ended the season and came back and kind of, you know, flex their muscles a little bit, winning the last two. They lost the first game against Irvine. Morales, you know, hadn't lost, I don't think, a college start at that point. I think that was his last win so far as well. And they came back, and that was the series that I'm talking about, where some of those balls did die in all three games, and Cal Poly kind of managed a way to come back and win the last two of those games. And I think that's where your home field advantage kind of comes into play. And that's why it's so important to win enough to host a regional. You know, that's the first kind of step for success. If you're not hosting the regional, it's a tough road to hoe, man.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, it's always better to be at home than on the road, for sure. You want to be playing in front of your own crowd. You know, you want to cheer. You want to see mom up there in the stands cheering you on. You want all your friends and family there. And when you're on the road away from home, you know, it can be a lot different. And especially when you have a home field that plays either big or small or has some quirks to it. We talked about this a little bit in the College Baseball Daily podcast, but I think when you have a home field that plays a certain way, especially like Bagot does day versus night, I think, you know, it makes it much more difficult for the opposing teams to get used to that. Whereas you, as the home team, you can flip the switch. If you're Florida State and you got a big net in right field, you know, you're used to playing with that. The pitcher's pitched to that. But if you're coming in, if you're Georgia Southern coming in and haven't played Florida State, I don't know how long, then you're like, well, all right, well, how do we play with this? How do we use this to our advantage?
Right, does it
you're
get in your head?
Out
yeah.
The entire weekend. Yeah.
Yeah, 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 cool. Yeah, awesome stuff. Shotgun Spratling, you can find him at College Baseball Daily. You guys, I think, put out a podcast this week, right?
Yeah, we did put out a podcast. The first half was released on Wednesday. The second half will be released on Thursday. So the second half has all our predictions in it. So you can hear all my predictions except for the San Luis Obispo regional, because I went Kirk Herbstreit on it and decided I would not pick against the regional that I was covering.
I love it. Well, all the Cal Poly fans will take that as a pick for Cal Poly. I'm sure the Arizona State fans, the Pepperdine fans, and Sac State fans too will take that as a pick for their team too. It's going to be a fun regional. Shotgun, I appreciate you coming on, and we'll see you on Friday.
All right, sounds good. Hopefully we'll make it up there in time for the first game after we get this whole work day and 8 hours out of the way. Then we'll be on the way up there to beautiful central coast of California for some San Luis Obispo regional action.
You're an animal. Driving like a madman up here. I hope you drive safe, and we'll see you when you get here.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright, they blind my vision. The people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. You lift me up, don't bring me down. You give your love to everyone around. You send me on my way to Trouble Town. I can't find my way around Trouble Town. Front page of the news.